Welcome to Beverage Chronicles. I'm Gary Monteroso, here with my co-host Michelle Lamb. She'll be along a little bit later. Each week, we bring you the latest beverage news plus smart consumer tips to help you buy better. Whatever you're choosing, beer, wine, spirits, or even those zero-proof options. Let's dive into what's new, what's noteworthy, and what's worth bringing home. This is Beverage Chronicles. Beer enthusiasts frequently have a preferred brew linked to memories of its distinct taste. However, over the years, many well-known beers have subtly changed their recipes, whether to reduce expenses, adhere to new regulations, or cater to wider preferences. Well, sometimes this involves a shift from high-quality hops to less expensive options, while in other instances, production has relocated, altering the water source and overall flavor profile. For dedicated fans, these changes can be quite apparent, igniting discussions about whether the beer remains the same. Here are some popular beers that no longer adhere to their original recipes. Marketed as the king of beers, Budweiser has undergone significant changes since its initial brewing days. It was initially crafted with just barley malt and imported hops, but the contemporary version incorporates rice as an adjunct to achieve a lighter body and a milder taste. This change allowed Budweiser to attract mass-marketed consumers, but it faced a backlash from traditionalists who favor all malt lagers. The expansion of production globally has also resulted in subtle variations as brewing facilities and water sources differ. While it still holds the title of America's flagship lager, today's Budweiser is often characterized as more streamlined and less robust than the beer that originally established its reputation. Guinness stands as one of the most legendary stouts globally, yet its recipe has not remained unchanged. Once brewed solely in Dublin, it's now made in various countries, and differences in water chemistry and brewing techniques mean the flavor can differ from location to location. In 2015, Guinness also stopped using isinglass, which is a fish-derived clarifier, making it vegan-friendly for the first time in its history. Although the beer still boasts its signature creamy head and roasted flavor, purists often contend that today's Guinness lacks the same richness found in its earliest iterations, particularly when brewed outside Ireland. Heineken has been a well-known global beer brand for a long time, but its recipe has slowly evolved to cater to international tastes. Previously recognized for its strong hop flavor and rich malt, the current version is lighter, smoother, and a bit sweeter. With production now taking place in breweries outside the Netherlands, local water and equipment also play a role in the flavor differences. Although it's still marketed as a premium lager, some longtime fans feel that today's Heineken is a milder, less bitter beer than what they used to enjoy. Oh, it's still popular, but it's not quite the same as the original recipe. Miller Lite was launched in the 1970s as the first mainstream American light lager, created to provide fewer calories without losing flavor. However, over the years, changes in hops, brewing methods, and large-scale production have affected its taste. Many longtime drinkers believe it now tastes thinner and less bold than when it first came out. Even though it still leads the light beer market and is a popular choice for those watching their calories, some people argue that the original Miller Lite had a better balance of flavor and refreshment than what's available today. Coors Light made its debut in the late 1970s and quickly gained popularity for its crisp, easy drinking style. The original recipe had a stronger malt flavor, but today's versions have been adjusted to be lighter and more refreshing. As brewing spread beyond Colorado, variations in water and equipment led to subtle taste changes. Adjustments in ingredients also helped the brand reduce costs and reach a wider audience. While Coors Light is still recognized for its cold filtered image and mountain fresh marketing, some critics say it has lost some of its unique character that once set it apart. Pabst Blue Ribbon has its roots in the 19th century, but the PBR we know today is quite different from the one that first earned praise. Initially crafted with a richer malt base, it has evolved to be lighter and more neutral, similar to other popular lagers. Changes in ownership and shifts in production have also influenced its flavor. The resurgence of PBR in the 2000s as a nostalgic, budget-friendly choice brought it back into the spotlight, yet many beer lovers feel that the current version is thinner and lacks the robust flavor of the award-winning beer it used to be. Stella Artois has always been marketed as a premium Belgian lager, but noticeable changes to its recipe have altered its profile. In various markets, the alcohol content was lowered from 5.2% to 4.8% as part of a cost-cutting strategy and also to fit local tax regulations. Additionally, Stella has been reformulated to achieve a lighter, less bitter taste to attract a wider audience. While it remains popular and is marketed stylishly, fans who remember the original recipe claim it has lost the complexity and sharpness it once had. For them, today's Stella seems like a milder version of its former self. And our last beer is Bass Pale Ale. This used to be one of England's most renowned beers, brewed with mineral-rich water that gave it a distinctive flavor. However, as production moved away from its original site, that unique character changed, since water chemistry plays a crucial role in brewing. The recipe has also been modified, leading to a beer that is less hoppy and a bit sweeter than the original. Although it still sports the iconic red triangle logo, beer enthusiasts often describe the modern version as a lighter, less intricate shadow of the ale that once set the benchmark for pale beers. So I wonder, did you drink any of these beers? And if so, have you noticed any changes over the years? If so, we'd love to hear from you. Go to our website at beveragechronicles.com, and at the bottom, you'll be able to find a spot where you can send us a message or a question. We'd love to hear from you. Okay, now on with the show.
What is up, everybody? Rachel here, aka Brews with Beerkowski, and I am here to talk to you today about some beer history. Today we're going to be talking about dry hopping, something that you probably see out in the beer world all the time. But do you actually know what it means? We're going to find out. Let's get nerdy. If you've stood in a beer aisle lately, you've probably seen the words dry hopped splashed across labels like a badge of honor. Brewers hype it, beer fans chase it, but what does it actually mean, and why should the everyday beer drinker care? Let's break it down. Dry hopping is a process of adding hops after the boil, usually during fermentation or conditioning. Instead of providing bitterness, which comes from boiling the hops, dry hopping pulls out the softer, more delicate qualities. Bright aromatics, juicy tropical notes, pine, citrus, flowers, herbs, everything that makes hops smell so incredible. Think of it like tossing fresh herbs into a dish at the very last minute instead of cooking them for hours. You get vibrancy instead of bitterness, freshness instead of heaviness. That's essentially dry hopping. So when did this technique become so popular? Dry hopping is not new. It actually goes back to British brewing centuries ago, especially in the early days of pale ales and IPAs. Brewers added hops to casks not for flavor, but for preservation. Hops were antibacterial and microbial, so tossing a handful into a cask helped stabilize the beer. But the modern version, the aromatic, flavor-driven dry hopping we know today, exploded with the rise of American craft beer. Breweries like Sierra Nevada in the 1980s popularized their signature citrus pine aroma in beers such as Sierra Nevada Pale Ale and Sierra Nevada Celebration Ale. As the American IPA evolved, so did dry hopping. By the early 2000s and 2010s, with West Coast IPAs, double IPAs, and eventually the New England IPA, dry hopping became the technique that defined an entire generation of beer. Brewers began experimenting with timing, temperature, hot varieties, even multi-stage double and triple dry hopping. And let's be real, none of those hazy mango passion fruit tangerine bomb IPAs would exist without dry hopping. It is the secret sauce. So why does it matter for consumers? Because knowing what dry hopping is tells you what to expect in your glass. If the label says heavily dry hopped, you're going to get lots of aroma, big explosive hop flavor, but definitely not extra bitterness. If you see double dry hopped, it usually means the brewer added hops in two stages, often more intensely, for more aroma and maybe a little bit more flavor. And if you're someone who loves fruity, juicy, bright beers, dry hopping is the technique that delivers those flavors. Understanding it helps you navigate the sea of IPAs that are on the shelf and pick one that actually matches your taste.
I'm Vince Douglas for Beverage Chronicles, and today I'm going to tell you the fastest way to ruin a good beer. Serving beer in a chilled glass is a common practice in many bars and restaurants, often seen by thirsty customers as a sign of good service and hospitality. The sight of a glass glistening with frost, suggesting immediate refreshment and great enjoyment, has become a staple in American beer culture, symbolizing status, sophistication, and best practices. However, for those who value quality over outdated appearances, this practice is not just unnecessary, it can actually take away from the experience of savoring a well-crafted beer. Don't take my word for it? Trust the science, or conduct a taste test yourself and thank me later. In the mid-20th century, mass-produced beers ruled the market. Light lagers were primarily created for maximum refreshment, rather than rich flavor or complex aroma. These were beers meant to be enjoyed easily, consumed cold and quickly, without much thought. As bars aimed to enhance the appeal of an icy cold pour, the frosted glass became the norm, its icy look a visual promise of coolness and refreshment. During hot summer days or in smoky bars, the chilled glass made macro lagers even more enjoyable by hiding flaws and enhancing their crisp, drinkable nature.
Public relations for beverage brands. Now, PR builds credibility for your bottle. Consumers rely on reputation before they taste. PR leverages awards, reviews, and expert recognition to build trust. For example, a whiskey brand wins a gold medal, and PR turns that achievement into national media coverage, boosting both retail and on-premise sales. Takeaways? Well, credibility increases trial. Expert validation influences purchase. And third-party endorsements set you apart. Thank you for tuning in to Beverage Chronicles. For more PR tips and insights, submit your questions to michelle@brooklynightmedia.com. This is your co-host, Michelle Lamb, and until then, cheers.
You heard from our beer historian, Rachel Benkowski. Always good to get our reports from her. She's fantastic. Love her. And then Vince Douglas came on to join us to tell us about steps that you can take to make sure you are not ruining your beer. Beer's not cheap. What drink is? Drinks are expensive. You want to make sure you're getting the best quality product. And then finally, our co-host, Michelle Lamb, giving us her public relations tips, marketing tips. Michelle, as you know, is the owner of Brooklyn Night Media. Well, that's it for this episode of Beverage Chronicles. I am Gary Monteroso. As always, we really want to thank you for your support, for having listeners, for getting listeners literally from all around the world. And this is just fantastic. We're thrilled with our growth, and it's all because of you. So again, thank you for joining us, and we will be back next week. Bye, everyone.